Good morning. My name is Justin, and I'm part of the Hoboken Grace speaking team, and I just want to echo what's already been said, that if this is your first week with us, we're super excited you're able to join us, and as Kyle said, I hope you had a chance to make yourself feel right at home. We are in this series we are calling The Ladder. It's a series where we're talking about our relationship at work and how it is that we're going to excel at work, and what does that look like for us? And in the first week, I think, was often a paradigm-shifting message for us, this idea that John Carlos brought to us that said, hey, out of love, out of the perfect relationship that was between God in heaven, out of that love, God created. Out of that immensely perfect love, God created. And when he created us. And he designed us to work. He designed us in mind with the idea that we would have work to do. And that as a result of that work that we have, as a result of that work, we then can bring glimpses of that perfect love that was the source of it all. And I think it was a big change in idea for us, this idea that we're designed to work. So many of us, we take the idea that if I'm doing work for the church or if I'm doing work for a nonprofit, that that is noble work. And then when I work for my accounting firm or if I work for the construction firm or whatever it is that I do, that that's my normal work. And we came across this idea that no, God doesn't say that. He doesn't separate the two, noble work from normal work. But he says that work, we're all designed to work. And when we create, when we do things that build, that we communicate again, a reminder that out of love, God creates. And it's a chance for us to bring glimpses of the kingdom to the people around us. The other thing we discovered when we were talking about that is that God is already at work. God is already at work pursuing our coworkers, pursuing the people there. It's not like we need to bring God there in a paper bag, otherwise he won't show up. But it's an opportunity for us to be salt and light and to point out where God is at work and to point out God in the marketplace, in our office. And the next week, we talked about how do we do that in light of the relationships that we have. Some of the people that we work with, they're tough to work with. And what does it look like for us to work with them, and how do we interact with them, and what can we do to change the nature of the relationship between those people and us? What do we do about the toxic people? And we had a great conversation that Anthony brought about how to deal with that situation. And we're going to continue our conversation about the ladders. We're going to continue our conversation about how to excel at work. And I think one of the things that's going to be informative to us about how to excel at work is to think for a little while about why we want to excel at work. So I thought about my own experience, and one of the very first things that motivated me at work was money. Yep, if I went to work and I did a good job, they gave me money. And in fact, I was so motivated by it, I want to show you what I brought here today. This is actually my first, this is the pay stub from my first paycheck at my first full-time job. I made $311.68 for my works a week there. And that was what was motivating me. I knew what it was like to be without money and without a place to live, and so money motivated me to go to work and to do well. And then I found as I had enough money, I had more money than I had expenses, I had more money than I had debt, I thought to myself, hey, when I go to work and I do well, they affirm me. They tell me I'm smart. They tell me that they're glad to have me be at work. And they want me to contribute on their projects. And it was affirming to me. It gave me a sense of identity that when I go to work and I do well, that they say, hey, he's doing a good job and we want him around. And I got that sense of identity. That was another reason why I was motivated to excel at work. And then I found as I was getting that affirmation that I had power. I had status in the marketplace. I had status at the office. So when we were renovating the facility, I could say, you know what? I think I want a window office. And the executive team said, you know, this division, they're getting the goods done. They're doing what needs to get done. And so, hey, maybe we will give this guy his window office. I had status in the marketplace. I could go there and I would say, I want the plum job. And they would say, yeah, you're right. He did a good job on that other stuff. Let's give him this. The reward for doing more good work is more work. It's not vacation. But I had power in the marketplace. I had status in my organization. And then the third thing that motivated me about going to work was I really believe in what I do. For 30 years, I've been in the computing industry. I really believe that computers can help us be more efficient at work. It can help us because it will free us up as people to do the things that people do well, and we can let the computers do what they do well. And I'm really excited because right now, most of you are carrying on your very person more computing power than NASA had when they sent two astronauts to the moon. And even though you spend most of our time posting these kinds of pictures using our computers that we have that could send astronauts to the moon, I still really believe in what computers can do and how they can make us more efficient. So that was what was motivating me in that first job, to work and to work well. And as you hear my story about this job, you might think to yourself, sounds like he succeeded. And you know, I have to tell you, we were doing some groundbreaking work. We were bringing computers to people who had never had them before. This was in the time when there was exactly two computers in the organization. There was the one computer that was in the back room. It needed special power. It needed special air conditioning. It had these ginormous boxes that stored the data. They were about the size of an industrial washing machine. And the other computer that they had on the receptionist's desk, and nobody knew what to do with it. And we were taking that organization, and we were putting computers in front of everybody. And IBM was really interested in what we were doing and how we were bringing computers to people and what problems did we have. For example, when we put computers down on people's desks, nobody had ever seen a mouse before. Nobody had ever seen a computer before. So we put this computer in front of them, and we're trying to teach them how to turn it on and how to work with the computer, and nobody knew how to use a mouse. You're used to this now, right? You go to the marketplace, you go to your office, you expect them to give you a computer and a mouse and a keyboard and a monitor. But in our place, we were bringing it into people who had been working with paper for years, and now we were giving them a computer to try to do things. So we gave them solitaire. We actually told them, here, play solitaire. That will help you to learn how to use the mouse. And you'll find that on many computing devices, one of the things you'll always find is solitaire. It was one of the tools we used to help people get familiar with computers. So we were doing some groundbreaking work. And again, you're going to look at that and you're going to say, look, he was succeeding. He had money and he had status and he had affirmation and what he was doing was good. And he had national fame. People were paying attention to what he was doing. So that looks like success. But I want you to know it wasn't. There are places where I wasn't excelling at work. I want to tell you about my friend Jim. Now, Jim was more than my colleague. He was more than a guy who I assigned work to. He was my friend. He was a guy, we spent time together on the weekends. Even though he was twice my age, we used to get together and have dinner together. He invited me into his home to have dinner with his family. He was my friend. But I was so focused on this goal of money and status and identity and power and getting the job done that I was trouncing all over Jim. And when he didn't meet my expectations, I was hard on him. I had become one of those toxic people that it's hard to work with. And eventually got to be so bad that Jim took one of the strategies that Anthony talked about last week. He left the organization. And you can imagine it was hard for me to hear from my friend, I can't work with you anymore. I'm going elsewhere because I can't work with you. And you might be thinking, okay, now he's going to tell me how he turned it around. But I'm not. I'm going to tell you about Michelle and Stacia and other people in my workplace who, when confronted with working with me and my focus, my laser focus on success and status and getting the job done, that I was trashing those relationships. And people actually had to leave the organization after dealing with me. Now I'm going to tell you how I turned it around. But no, the next thing that happened is I went to a new organization where I had a chance to make more money, have more institutional power, have more status, have more opportunity to change the way that people did things. I hadn't learned that. And you're probably not surprised because we're all sort of taught this at a very early age to keep reaching for this measurement of success, keep reaching for this money and fame and identity and power and status in the marketplace, status at work. We're constantly being taught this message. Look in your yearbook. For some of you, you have to dust it off. I don't have one. I burned it. But if you look in that yearbook, you're going to see statements like, we'll see you at the top, and we can do this together, and we're going to get there together. And even if your yearbook says more stuff like more like party on, dude, it said party on, dude, to the max. Even at an early age, we keep reaching for this goal of status. This goal of status measured by money and fame and identity and power. I want to tell you about a guy who largely has succeeded. His name is Tom Brady. Tom Brady, now some of you already know who I'm talking about. He's the quarterback for the New England Patriots. And those of you who are Giants fans are probably rolling your eyes that I'm using Tom Brady as my example. But you got to give the guy due, right? His name appears on the leaderboard of a lot of statistics in the NFL. He has 3 Super Bowl rings. He has a $1 million contract to play for the New England Patriots. He has a modeling career. But listen to what he has to say about his success.
I used to get $600 dorm checks and go eat Subway and use pizza cards to get my way through college and eat baked potatoes and make pancakes every night. So I don't think that's ever been a big thing for me. I mean, I'm making more money now than I ever thought I could ever make playing football.
He's turned down multi-million dollar endorsement deals because he didn't think they were right for him. And many of the ones he's taken, he's shared with his teammates.
You guys have to go everywhere with me.
But with all that money, fame, and career accomplishments, we were surprised to hear this from him.
Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey, man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life is me. I thank God. It's got to be more than this.
What's the answer?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew.
Wow, that's incredible. Here's Tom Brady at the top of his field, and he says, there's got to be more than this. And when asked, what is it? He says, I wish I knew. And you're not surprised. You're not surprised that we're saying, you know, when we reach for these markers as success, that it's going to leave us unfulfilled. There are thousands of stories, I'm sure you've heard them yourself, thousands of stories where people said, I've been reaching for this my whole life, and when I get there, I find I've left it what I really wanted behind. I want to tell you another story. I want to tell you about this guy named Solomon. Now, Solomon was king of Israel thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. And when he was king, he was the king. I mean, at that point, Israel was a vast nation, and all the other little kingdoms and kings around them, they had to pay tribute to Solomon. They had to swear their allegiance to him. Well, I want you to hear what Solomon has to say about his success. How many of you thought I was going to show a video of Solomon up there? Come on! No, we're going to go to Ecclesiastes. That's where Solomon writes about his success. He says in Ecclesiastes 2, oh, I did great things. I built houses, planted vineyards, designed gardens and parks, and planted a variety of fruit trees in them. I made pools of water to irrigate the groves of trees. I bought slaves, male and female, who had children, giving me even more slaves. Then I acquired large herds of flocks, larger than anyone before me in Jerusalem. I piled up silver and gold, loot from kings and kingdoms. This is going to go on for a while. Like I said, Solomon was the king, right? I mean, he's going to keep going. I gathered a chorus of singers to entertain me with song, and most exquisite of all pleasures, voluptuous maidens for my bed. Oh, how I prospered. I left all my predecessors in Jerusalem far behind. I left them behind in the dust. And what's more, I kept a clear head through it all. Solomon is famous for his wisdom. Everything I wanted, I took. I never said no to myself. I gave in to every impulse, held nothing back. I sucked the marrow of pleasure out of every task, my reward to myself for a hard day's work. And then I took a good look at everything I'd done, look at all the sweat and hard work. But when I looked, I saw nothing but smoke. Smoke and spitting into the wind. There was nothing to any of it. Nothing. You've heard millions of these stories, thousands of these stories that say, when I pursue success measured by fame and money, identity and power, I realize it's nothing but spitting in the wind. And the terrible thing is that when we pursue those things, it can rob us of the very best things. When we pursue those things, it can rob us of the very best opportunities available to us. And that's not all. Sometimes when we pursue those things, we begin to experience fear, and that motivates our behavior. We begin to be afraid that we're going to lose our grip on these things. I'm going to lose my grip on my salary and on my status and my position in the organization. And we begin to let fear dominate our behavior. I think that's what happened to me when I was at my first job. I was afraid I was going to lose these things. And because I was afraid, I was that toxic person at work. And I actually was making the place a dark place to work, a difficult place to work. So how do we excel if we're not pursuing these things? And I think the story of Solomon is very illustrative. It really shows us that when we pursue those things, that it's chasing after the wind, that it leads us to nothing. And fortunately, the story of Jesus tells us what we can pursue, what can fulfill us. Listen to this passage in Matthew 4. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and his brother Andrew, and they were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will send you out to fish for people." And at once they left their nets and followed him. Jesus showed Peter and Andrew and shows us that there's a larger, broader mission at work, and that mission is helping people find their way back to God. That mission is helping people discover those glimpses of the kingdom, those signs and indication that God is at work and that that perfect love is reaching out to them. And that is what our mission is, to reach for people, not things. Well, one of the things I want to point out about this very early on in the conversation is to say this, that it's not about not being diligent at work. God does not want you to go to work and spend all your time taking people to coffee. He says, be diligent. Listen to this passage from Colossians 3. Servants, do what you're told by your earthly masters, and don't just do the minimum that will get you by. Do your best. Work from the heart for your real master, for God, confident that you'll get paid in full when you come into your inheritance. Keep in mind always that the ultimate master you're serving is Christ. The sullen servant who does shoddy work will be held responsible. And being a follower of Jesus doesn't cover up bad work. God's not telling us to be slackers and to do bad work. He says, yes, go to work and be diligent. Listen to your earthly masters and do a good job. Do your best job. But what does it look like to do our best job? And the other thing I want to point out is this idea that fear, if we don't keep reaching for this, if we reach for the mission of reaching people instead of these things, our fear can kick in, and we're afraid we're going to lose our grasp on those things. But God says, don't be afraid. All over the Bible, he tells us not to be afraid. Here's a passage where he says that. God can pour on the blessings in astonishing ways so that you're ready for anything and everything, more than just ready to do what needs to be done. As one psalmist puts it, he throws caution to the wind, giving to the needy in reckless abandon. His right living, right giving ways never run out. Never wear out. And this most generous God who gives seed to the farmer that becomes bread for your meals is more than extravagant with you. And I'm not saying that God is going to heap on us wealth and power like Solomon, but I'm saying he's going to give us what we need in order to excel at work. We don't need to strive for those things because God is going to give us what we need. We don't need to fear we're going to lose because God is going to give us what we need. We're going to be free to give in the marketplace, to give in our offices with abandon. Less time fighting for position and more time trying to figure out how we can be salt and light. Here's our actual motivation. Our motivation is that God is our master and we have an opportunity to reach the people that we work with. And one of the things that we know is that God is going to give us what we need. Well, I think there's this incredible passage in Galatians that talks about what God gives us when we need it in the marketplace, at the office. And it's this passage in Galatians 5, and I learned it like this. The fruit of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. Those are the fruit of the Spirit. And when we let God work through our lives, he gives us these incredible gifts that enable us to excel in the marketplace. I'm going to read that passage to you again. I'm going to give you a different version so you can sort of get a flavor for what we're talking about here. God can pour on the blessings in his, oops, I'm sorry, wrong passage. But what happens when we live God's way? He brings gifts into our lives, much in the same way that fruit appear in an orchard. Things like affection for others, exuberance about life, serenity. He gives us a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in the heart, and a conviction that a basic holiness permeates things and people. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments, not needing to force our way in life, able to marshal and direct our energies wisely. If we let God guide our lives, if we let God be the motivation for how we excel at work, he's going to give us these incredible gifts that make it possible. Let me give you some specific examples. One of the things that we can do because of these gifts is we can bring life with our words. We can take every opportunity to speak to people generously, kindly, to speak encouragement to them. So much of what happens at work, all of the strife and difficulties, is born out of ambition. It's born out of gossip, divisive conversation, politics, posturing, backstabbing, all of that stuff. It makes work a hard place to be. It makes us dread going into work. But if we can go into those situations and speak words of life, speak words of light, we can change the flavor of the conversation. We can change the tone of the conversation at work. This happened to me not too terribly long ago. I was going to see some coworkers. I had a question I need answered. So I went to them and I said, as I walked up, they were talking about my coworker, another coworker of ours, and they were dissing him. They're speaking negatively about him. And I said, I know that all of us have something in us that makes us difficult to work with. But you know what? He's really good at the details. He pays so careful attention to the details like no one else. We really shouldn't be talking about him like that behind his back. And then I asked my question. And it took a lot of courage to say that to my coworkers, to say, hey, we need to change the conversation. But I think what was most influential is that I spoke well of him. I spoke of his diligence and his attention to detail. I spoke positively of him. I spoke words of life into that situation. Listen to what it talks in Ephesians about that. It says, get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. In the marketplace, at your office, take every opportunity to speak well of the people that you're working with. Become known for your integrity, known for the fact that you're going to speak well of people and not drag people down, that you're not participating in that office politics of gossip or darkness, but instead you're bringing light to it because you speak well of the people you work with. I think part of speaking well, honestly, is also taking time to listen. So often when somebody is coming to us with a problem or a concern or a question, we are already thinking in our minds, what are we going to say in response to this? How are we going to respond to their concern? How are we going to respond? What position, what point am I going to make that's going to address what they have to say? And I think that we have an opportunity and to listen, to really hear what they have to say, to look deeper into what they're saying and what they're trying to ask. And together, once we really understand what the real problem is, we can find a solution that's more than just a Band-Aid, but actually fixes the problem. It will help our organization's mission if we take the time to listen to the people who are talking and try to really understand it from their perspective, not worried about our position. And I'll be honest, it takes patience. It takes self-control, those things that we talked about that are part of the fruit of the Spirit. It takes self-control to listen to people. But it also demonstrates peace. It says, you know what? I'm not worried about my position or my power or my status or my point. But instead, I'm going to take energy and effort to listen to you, to really understand you, what you need, and try to find a solution together. And can you imagine the impact this is going to have on our coworkers, on our clients, on our customers? When we stop and instead of arguing and start raising our point, we take the time to really listen to them, to really understand what it is that they're trying to say. And I think both of these, and another thing that we can do, is to practice humility. When we practice humility, what we're saying is, you know what, I'm going to spend my energy trying to understand what your issue is and help you get advance. I'm going to try to understand what's going on and help you advance your position. Try to get you along to the next point, wherever you're aimed for. And I'm not saying that we're going to be doormats and that people come in with bad ideas and we should just run with them. That's not good for the organization. That's not good for our coworkers, and that's not good for us. That's not how we succeed or excel. But that if we take those opportunities to listen and to take humility and say, what can I do to help this person get to the next step? What can I do to help them? Listen to what James says about this. He says, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. And this is the opportunity. We have been given these incredible gifts from God, this incredible connection with God. We have these gifts, this opportunity to speak peace and kindness and gentleness, to be faithful, to experience joy in the marketplace, in our offices. It's a great gift that God has given us. And it's a great opportunity that we have. Now, I can't say that I've arrived. I haven't. I can tell you more stories about how when I'm so focused on this, and that's my default, to be so focused on this, that I'm careless with the people that I work with. But I know that I need God to help me to speak peace and joy and patience and kindness and goodness. I need that from God. I need him to fill me up so that it will splash on to my coworkers. When he fills me up with that, it will filter out and go on to the people I interact with. And so that's why I think it's so important for us to return to this passage and remember who it is that we work for. Servants, do what you're told by your earthly masters, and don't just do the minimum that will get you by. Do your best. Work diligently. Work from the heart for your real master, for God, confident that you'll get paid in full when you come into your inheritance. Keep in mind always that the ultimate master you are serving is God. God tells us to work diligently. He tells us to listen to our bosses and to do what we're doing at work well. But we can excel at generosity. We can excel at kindness. And think about what kind of a coworker you want to work with. You would love to work with people who come in and speak positively and speak generously with you, who really listen to what concerns you have. And then together you find solutions for those problems that you've decided found together, taking a moment away from advancing their own causes to help you along with yours. And we have been given this gift, this power that comes from God, the opportunity to actually speak life in these dark places, to speak love. You know, there are three missions at work. There's the mission of the organization, whatever they're trying to accomplish. There's the mission of you at work, whatever you do, and doing it diligently. And then there's the mission of communicating God's amazing love. The mission of bringing glimpses of God's amazing kingdom and the love that sourced the creation that we are part of. And all three of those missions can be accomplished when we take care of the people around us, when we really listen, when we speak words of life, when we exhibit humility and practice humility and help people accomplish the goals they're trying to reach. And the cool thing about it is this, that we live in New York City. This is the crossroads of the world. People from all over come here, and they come here to work and to play and to live, and then maybe they move on. But they're here now, and we have an opportunity to have an impact on their lives, to help people go from places where they're making decisions that lead to darkness, and instead we can give them a glimpse of the kingdom, a glimpse of God and his perfect love. We have an opportunity to talk to those people and to speak with them and remind them, to let them know, hey, God loves you. And we can fulfill that mission of trying to catch people by doing these things, by speaking words of affirmation, speaking words of love, by really listening, by setting aside our own need to advance ourselves in hopes that we can advance the other people around us. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see how God is going to work through our lives to impact the people around us. Will you pray with me? Father, I am thankful that you are a God of love, a God who out of love creates. It's an amazing thing that you are, and one, you're a God that I want to follow. I like following. And I confess, God, that when I go to the marketplace, I don't always treat people the way that you would treat them. I don't always remember that you're already there pursuing them, that you love my coworkers too. And so I'm asking, will you help us? Help us to love our coworkers. Help us to reach people for you by filling us with your gifts, the gifts that fill us up and make us the kind of people that can excel at work in the way that we treat our coworkers. I'm just so grateful for your amazing love, and I know that you're with us. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you later.